You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm C.J. Takis. Let's head over to downtown Inglewood on Market Street, just a mile and a half from the $5 billion football stadium where the LA Rams will face off against the Cincinnati Bengals in Super Bowl 56, 1 week from Sunday. Outside a popular coffee shop called Sip and Sonder, Inglewood Mayor James T. Butts basks in the spotlight. He's just finished an interview with a local TV station about his city's transformation to an entertainment mecca.
It's our coronation and coming out party. We're starting to get our due, but it took a Super Bowl to do it.
To the mayor, getting your due means national attention and respect. Both the Rams and the LA Chargers now call SoFi Stadium home. The Fabulous Forum's been revived from its 1980s heyday. The LA Clippers are building an arena here, too. So what will all these changes mean for the people of Inglewood? Well, that depends on whom you ask, as KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb found out.
Fredricia Dixon moved to Inglewood about 7 years ago, and since then she says she's had front row seats to her town's transformation. A working-class city that's about half Latino, but best known as a home base for LA's black culture. It's faced many years of economic disinvestment. But now...
It's a clean and beautiful community. I love Inglewood so much. And now that all of these, the sports venues are coming in, those improvements aren't for us because, first of all, we can't afford it.
Dixon is a community activist who's running for mayor this year. She's talking specifically about housing prices, and there's something to that. The median household income in Inglewood sits just above $50,000. That's according to recent census data. Zillow puts the typical home price at just below $750,000. That puts home ownership out of reach for most as home prices keep rising.
For people like me who are renters and who dreamed of owning a home in my own community, it's practically impossible for me, but just because these venues are here, you know? So we don't like that. That's gentrification. The gentrification is happening here in Inglewood.
Yes, Inglewood is gentrifying, like much of Los Angeles. But if you ask Khalifa Bey, there's an opportunity for residents who are shrewd. You either get on board, she says, or you risk being left behind. Bey is the head of the South LA Bureau of Tourism and Trade.
Growth has to take place. Are the residents being unfairly treated? Possibly, because they are the tax base. They are the people who live here. And what I encourage them to do is to open a business, stop complaining about it, and put yourself in a position to receive.
At least in the short term, you can see that happening with the Super Bowl. Locals are, quote, putting themselves in a position to receive, looking for ways to cash in on the football crowd. A quick review of Airbnb prices in the area shows they're about double what they normally would be because of the big game. Other residents have been taking advantage of SoFi Stadium's parking woes, renting space on their front lawns for hundreds of dollars. It's a boon in the short term, sure, but the real question is, does Inglewood get anything out of it when it's not game day?
It's a significant drop-off. You know, Inglewood's more than the stadium, and I think that's the part that is very noticeable. So there's a lot of bodies here on game days, and then right after those games, there aren't.
Amanda Jane Thomas owns and operates Sip and Sonder, the coffee shop on Market Street, with her business partner, Shanita Nicholas.
There's never enough, right? Like, there's never enough. There's still boarded buildings, you know, in downtown. There's still spaces that are vacant, and there are entrepreneurs that can go into those spaces.
To that end, they run a nonprofit called Sonder Impact, where they've been hosting a number of community events. Business pitch competitions, workshops, you name it. All geared toward encouraging Black and Brown entrepreneurship in Inglewood.
It's an exciting time to be in Inglewood, whoever you are, if you are provided the opportunity to be part of it and have access to it.
Of course, many in Inglewood don't have that access. That was on display last weekend when local media covered the cleanup of a homeless camp in Inglewood.
Removing homeless encampments and debris in Inglewood for the second day in a row today, and some are speculating the upcoming Super Bowl is a factor.
To some members of the community, that cleanup looks like city leaders sweeping some of Inglewood's biggest problems aside. Here's Khalifa Bey.
They're doing this cleanup now strictly for appearance sake for the Super Bowl. You know, I mean, we're intelligent people. We live here. We see what's going on.
That intersection is close to 3 miles from the stadium. It's just absurd.
Where some see whitewashing, Mayor Butts sees racism.
When you have a black and brown community that so overachieves, it generates a certain level of resentment that creeps its way into media coverage.
In other words, Butts says folks are looking for what's wrong with Inglewood because its success is anathema to their perceptions of the city.
That's what happens, and we're used to it. We're used to someone always trying to figure out what the bad thing is. There is no bad thing here. There's what there is greatness.
And the pinnacle of that greatness, the Super Bowl. COVID forced the NFL to move its biggest game last year to Tampa, Florida. This year, it's going to be all eyes on Inglewood. For KCRW, I'm Benjamin Gottlieb.
All right, just ahead, some folks can afford thousands of dollars to go to the Super Bowl, many more. In L.A., can't even afford food. That's where one loving organization comes in. Feeding People on Skid Row. It's yours on the other side of this.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. If one circle of your Venn diagram is your life's passion and the other is a desire to serve the community, well, then the overlap of those two circles can make a big difference in lives. Yet another way to help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy. Oh, baby, have it now. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Carrie Golden, like pretty much everyone else, was bummed that Halloween 2020 was put on the back burner because of COVID. She just graduated from culinary school, and she took the money she would have spent on fun and candy and bought ingredients instead to feed the hungry. Well, now her organization, called Love Kitchen, partnering with other nonprofits and working off donations, says it uses about $100 a week to make and serve food for the unhoused folks of Skid Row. Carrie Golden, thanks for coming on Greater LA.
It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us about a typical day for you in Love Kitchen. What exactly happens?
Well, I spend a lot of my week sourcing food through other nonprofits that are also rescuing food. I work with Nourish LA, with Copia LA Food Forward, Hollywood Food Co-op, and some other folks, and also through a great app called Carrot, which helps people that have food that they need to give away connect with people who need food. So I do a lot of that, a lot of driving around and picking things up and sort of looking at what I've collected and go, okay, you know, what can I make from this? And then whatever gaps that I have in the menu, then I'll go and actually take the, you know, donation money and fill those gaps in with whatever protein or something to really make it healthy and nourishing and fulfilling for as many people as possible.
So that's the $100. That's where the $100 go. Because you have you have other people, other organizations who are obviously helping as well.
Yes, it didn't start out that way, but it has grown into that, which has been kind of the one of the really cool aspects about growing this and developing this is that there are a lot of like-minded people out there who had exactly the same feeling during COVID. And you know, just feeling idle and wanting to do something to make things better, and realizing that, you know, we actually all individually have the power to do that, and we don't have to wait for somebody else to do that.
Most of us have been to Skid Row. I know it just because I worked in downtown LA for many years and would be there actually in the middle of the night going to work. And it can be pretty overwhelming. I mean, what's the experience been like for you doing this kind of work in that kind of place?
Well, when I started doing Love Kitchen, the food was actually being picked up from me by the daughter of one of my best friends, who also is the LA coordinator for Love Movement. Her name is Annalise Cortez. And then eventually I wound up having so much stuff that they couldn't fit everything in their vehicle. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go down and do this. You know, I was always exhausted after doing all this cooking for this many people. And I was actually a little bit afraid that, you know, it would hurt my heart so much. But the reality of it, even though there are some, you know, heartbreaking things and some disturbing things about being down there, is that, you know, they're just regular people, and a lot of them, you know, have jobs and still are not able to be housed for whatever reason. It's a huge spectrum of people. So, you know, getting down there and actually seeing it makes you realize that you can't put everybody all into one bucket. And it's actually been one of the most gratifying things that I do.
You have a job as well. You have a day job, right?
I have several day jobs.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I have a private vocal coach studio. I also teach at La Cañada High School. Shout out to my students. vocal coaching there. And I write and sing electronic music.
And you're a chef. Let's not forget that. You went to culinary
Correct.
School. You are a
yes.
are a trained chef.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
And how do you juggle doing all this? I mean, in trying to make a living in LA. I mean, do you ever see this as maybe this is your day job? This is what you're supposed to do? I mean, no pressure, right?
I mean, I actually thrive off of having different things. It's kind of like I like to have a million different things on my plate of food, too. Like, I don't want to eat just one huge bowl of macaroni and cheese. So for me, it keeps things fresh and it keeps things exciting in my life to be able to sort of do a little bit here and do a little bit there. And, you know, that's the essence of being a creative person, I think, in this town, is that, you know, you do kind of cobble your living together out of a bunch of different things. And that's all right.
You know, we would be remiss to not talk about the pandemic. The fact that, well, number one, this sort of came out of the pandemic, right? You were looking for something to do. And I wonder,
yes.
you know, what's it like doing this in the middle of a pandemic? I mean, it's dangerous, right? I mean, to be out there among so many people.
I mean, yes and no, I suppose. There's constant COVID testing going on down on Skid Row. Everybody wears masks and you know, so you're taking as many of the precautions as you can. And I think most people at this point are vaccinated or at least testing a whole bunch. And that helps, you know, give me peace of mind. You know, everybody's trying to care for each other. So everybody's taking as many precautions as we possibly can to make sure that nobody gets sick.
Y'all have an event coming up this weekend that really is the ultimate Venn diagram, because it's the confluence of a fundraiser for the organization, but it's also another passion of yours, as you mentioned, which is music.
Yes.
And DJing. You've got a lot of DJ friends as well. Tell us what's going on and what folks can do to help.
Okay, so this is an event called Local Love. And essentially, you know, I've been writing and singing electronic music, you know, on a pretty good level for about 12 years. So I kind of know everybody in the DJ world in Los Angeles. And I've worked with a bunch of different promoters over the years. And my good friend Beth Ferris does the bookings for the Globe Theater. When the Grammys got canceled, the venue opened up. And she said, hey, what do you think about maybe doing a fundraiser at the Globe Theater? And I, you know, I'm not a promoter. So I was like, okay. But I've said, you know, let me reach out to a couple of people and see what they say. So I just went after my favorite people. And I just asked them if they would be willing to do it and donate their sets. And every single one of them said yes. And it was literally that easy. So we're charging a really low door cover of $20, and all of that is going into the nonprofit. each dollar will feed one person. So when you buy a ticket at the door, you're feeding 20 people. So it's a way to be able to make it fun, I guess, to advocate for this kind of social change and community contribution. So yeah, that's how those things kind of crossed over.
Good luck to you on the event. Again, it's Saturday, right, at the Globe Theater.
Yes, the tickets are on Eventbrite. It's called Local Love.
Local Love. And it's, is it L-O-V-E? Because your organization is Love Kitchen, L-O-V.
Right. It's L-O-V, Love, Local Love.
Just like Love Kitchen, L-O-V Kitchen. Mm-hmm. Carrie Golden, L.A. Yes. chef and musician who started Love Kitchen more than a year ago to feed hungry people on Skid Row. Carrie, thanks for all you do, and thanks for coming on to talk about it. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Steve. I really appreciate it. Really a lot. Thank you.
Coming up, love may be in the air, but good Lord, so is art. A big stretch of art shows and fairs are headed to LA in the coming weeks. You're going to hear all about them right after this. Back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. One of the biggest weekends in LA's art scene is right around the corner. Freeze, Felix, and Spring Break Art Fairs are all returning to Los Angeles the weekend of February 17th, just a couple of weeks from now. It's a multi-day art extravaganza with lots to check out all across the greater LA region. Here to preview it is our art insider, Lindsay Preston Zappas. She's editor-in-chief over at Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Hey, Lindsay.
Hey, Steve.
Freeze is returning after, there was a hiatus last year because of the pandemic. Remind us, what is Freeze LA and the fair that goes with it? What's it all about?
Yeah, so Freeze is a longstanding art fair. It's an offshoot of Freeze Magazine, which is a contemporary art publication. And the fair has been going on for a while. It's been in London for almost 20 years and in New York for 10 years. And then 3 years ago, they brought it to Los Angeles. So it was really exciting for the art community and just for the city in general to be kind of put on the map as an international art city alongside New York and London. And then they're actually opening a location in Seoul as well this year. So they continue to expand the fair. But bringing the fair to Los Angeles has really just exploded out into this week-long kind of extravaganza of satellite fairs and exhibitions and events. So it'll be a lot of fun.
And it's happening at a new location this year, right? I mean, what can you expect when you go to this year's fair? And where is it now?
Yeah, so previously, you might remember, it was in a big tent on the Paramount Studios lot. So this year they've actually moved to a new location in Beverly Hills, and it's on a lot adjacent to the Beverly Hilton Hotel. And I've been told that the site allows for a bigger tent, so the fair can actually include more participants. So this year the exhibition will include 100 international galleries. And, you know, the fair is definitely a specific type of art viewing experience. It's a pretty sales-driven kind of event, although it is a really great way to see trends across contemporary art and kind of learn about new artists and galleries. One section I'm really looking forward to is called Focus LA, and that's going to highlight 11 younger LA galleries that have been open for about 15 years or less. So a lot of these galleries we're familiar with, we've talked about on the show, Steve. So like Stanley's Gallery, Bellamy, Parker Gallery. So these are kind of familiar names that will have a presence at the fair as well.
With their own section over there, Jason, as you mentioned, to the Beverly Hilton Hotel. You just came from a preview of Freeze today. What stood out to you the most, Lindsay?
Yeah, I'm always curious what the fair will do in terms of programming and sort of outside the sort of fair tent area. So for instance, at Paramount, when the fair took place there, there was a really cool back lot where artists would install sculptures and there were performances, and it felt a little more interactive. So for this iteration, they've asked artist Tanya Aguaniga to curate a program called BIPOC Exchange. And Tanya has invited 10 BIPOC organizations who all work in the arts but also have a real community focus to participate in this. And there's going to be a series of events, workshops, and performances with organizations like LA Poverty Department and Tierra del Sol. And that will all take place in an auxiliary tent kind of across the street from the main fair. So I just wanted to shout that out so people make sure to go there. And it's also going to be the only part of the fair that's free and accessible to the public. So they really want to engage the community in that space. And it's something you can check out even without a fair ticket.
All right. That's Freeze LA. Now we're talking about Felix LA, which is also going on that weekend. What are you most excited about at Felix?
Yeah, I mean, Felix is like such a vibe. It's a really fun offshoot of Freeze. It's not connected, but it popped up the same year that Freeze came to Los Angeles. And it's really developed its own kind of culture and energy. It happens at the Roosevelt Hotel, and a lot of the rooms open up onto the pool. So there's this really casual atmosphere for art viewing where you're kind of wandering in and out of these poolside cabanas and looking at art in hotel rooms. And they had an iteration over the summer that only included LA galleries. So I'm really excited for this round to, again, have, you know, non-LA galleries in the mix this time. Charles Moffett Gallery in New York has a really nice pairing of LA artist Lily Stockman and Barry Zipperstein. I'm looking forward to Mrs. Gallery, which is another New York gallery. I'm always excited to see what they do at fairs. They always seem to have a really nice kind of fresh collection of artists and work. Jack Hanley will have figurative painter Jeffrey Chung. So there's just going to be a lot to see and again, a little more casual than Freeze.
And if that weren't enough, there's also the Spring Break Art Fair as well. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, I mean, as you're picking up, every fair kind of has to have its own energy or kind of identity. So Spring Break is definitely a different type of model for an art fair. They change locations each time. This iteration will take place in Culver City. And the fair really has a much more artist and curator focused identity. So unlike the other fairs, they don't charge the artists or curators to participate, but rather they take a percentage of sales, kind of if anything sales. But it really prompts the participants to try out more ambitious projects and installations because they're not really necessarily counting on the sales aspect. So you can expect to see a lot more kind of interesting installations at that fair. This year, the fair theme is hearsay heresy. It's a tongue twister. and the fair organizers have this kind of like subtle medieval theme happening. But they wanted to draw connections between like the plague year and the pandemic. But it'll be really interesting to see how artists kind of take that theme and interpret it with kind of a loose license. One highlight is the actor Alia Shekhet, who you might know from shows like Arrested Development or Search Party, and she's actually going to be contributing her own artwork to the fair and will be collaborating with a childhood friend on site during the fair to create new works.
So, all right, before I let you go, Lindsay, a bunch of galleries are also going to be opening up shows that weekend as well. Not to be outdone, there's got to be more. So tell us about what else is going on that weekend in gallery spaces.
Yeah, I mean, as you can imagine, it's such an exciting time for galleries and museums. There's so many people coming into town for Freeze and people that are really committed to art viewing. So galleries really tend to put up excellent exhibitions during this month. So there's going to be a ton of talks and events and panel discussions really across the city during Fair Week. Some of these Freeze will be kind of formally listing on their site. But there's also a really great website called For Your Art. .com that lists exhibitions and events. So I think that'll be a really great resource to kind of keep up with what's going on that week. But really just a ton to see across the city. It's going to be a really fun week of events. And I should mention that tickets to all the fairs are still available, but they do go fast, particularly for Freeze. Sometimes they sell out. So it's good to order those ahead.
And again, it's just a couple of weeks from now. So if you want to go, you got to get a move on. A lot going on in LA's art world in the next couple of weeks. Lindsay Preston Zapp is founder and editor-in-chief of Carla Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Lindsay, as always, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
That's going to do it for us today. Next week, with so many electric cars coming on the market, who's going to fix your Tesla or Rivian, if you can even afford one? Besides the dealer, of course, the future of car mechanics, one of the many offerings for next week on Greater LA. Online at kcrw.com/GLA. How are you doing? How are we doing? You can find any episode at the website, too. And you can get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all had hands and ears on this evening's episode. And we say so long today to our reporter and producer, Benjamin Gottlieb, who is off on a podcast adventure. We're wishing you the best, Benjamin. You and I have been through a lot, my friend, over the years at KCRW. Just always remember, we'll always, always have Bay Cities. I'm Steve Chitakis. Thanks for your ears and time tonight. Have a great night.